Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're starting the show today by talking about an exciting program called the Dairy Grazing Apprenticeship Program, and have a couple of guests for you. One is Anthony Knightsky, who is a farmer, recently completed the two-year dairy grazing apprenticeship. Anthony's now a journeyman grazer on the Tomondale farm. And Anthony, welcome. Good to have you with us today.
Hi.
Of course, with us as well, Joe Tomondale is a third-generation dairy farmer in central Wisconsin. He spearheaded the development of dairy grazing apprenticeship program, the first formal apprenticeship for farming in the U.S. And Joe, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
As we talk with these two, I hope you'll join in with your questions. What do you want to know about dairy farming and maybe grazing, dairy grazing? Tell us why maybe you prefer to support small farmers. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. First, I think we should talk about dairy grazing itself. How does it differ from, what, I don't know, what you might call it, traditional dairy farming in the state? Joe, you
want to
go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Larry. You know, managed grazing dairy, it is a little bit different because really what we're trying to do is whenever there's grass and, well, there isn't snow on the ground, we're basically trying to send the cows out to their own field and harvest as much of their feed for the day on their own. So we will send them through permanent pasture. So a lot of our fields right around the barns and the facilities here are underneath permanent type of grass, which is covering up the soil. And then we send the cows out and we basically, we'll give them sometimes three different breaks a day, a lot of times. And we'll let them go out and they will be in a break for 12 hours or 5 hours. And then we move them to the next to allow that grass to rest and regrow and allow the cows to get as much feed as possible from that piece of grass. So that's what we're really trying to mimic, is just, you know, some of these, you know, some of these other more natural type of systems in integrated animal livestock care.
So this is quite a bit different. Well, a bit different, I think, from the normal as you're describing it here. How is it? I mean, you have been very successful doing it, Joe. And before we get to Anthony, first, maybe tell us about your operation. It's grown over time.
Yeah, so my wife and I started with the farm in 1998. So we were actually ag teachers for a few years. And then we were starting a family. So we had purchased a small dairy in our hometown near where I grew up. My wife and I are each from dairy farms. So that's some of our background. Managed grazing is what allowed us to start dairying, because we were allowed to get started on kind of on a shoestring. We didn't have to spend as much money on infrastructure and equipment. You know, we could really focus on getting cows in here and some fencing, and you're really hiring the cows to do half of the work for the year in finding their own feed for half of the year. So it really reduced the amount of equipment we needed and the amount of feed storage and the amount of manure storage and everything else. So it was a really good way to get started. We stuck with managed grazing. I understood it. I liked it and liked the way it worked. And our farm slowly grew and it became about 150 cow dairy, a little bit more than that. And then we really tried to figure out, you know, my wife, Christy, and I trying to think, how do we continue investing into this type of dairy? And, you know, really, as we looked at it, we did not want to give up the efficiencies of the having a large amount of dry matter or a large amount of feed going into these cows every day for them to harvest on their own. And if we would have doubled the amount of cows on our farm, they would have had a lot less grass to eat, and a lot less of their food per day would have been able to come off the grazing platform. So what we did in 2010 is we had purchased a second dairy to try to duplicate the first one. So it was a traditional dairy farm, and we fenced it. We put lanes in, we put water lines in, and we added about 150 cows to that one. And so instead of having one 300 cow dairy, we had 250 cow dairies. And with the amount of cows really balanced to the acreage that was there, to try to get as much dry matter, you know, off of that. And then we also, in 2020, we did it again. And there was another farm. Christy's still with me after all this. So right now what we have is we have three of these, about 175 cow grazing dairies. And I guess this is really our formula or our model to try to stay relevant in the dairy industry. You know, the costs of everything and just flat economies of scale and where just any economies and business go, you need to be able to keep up with it. And we're trying to stay relevant also in the market so that, you know, we've got enough milk in our little area here. So, you know, we can get as close to filling a semi as we can every other day. So That's kind of the model that we've chosen, to move forward with our dairy farm.
And Anthony, you're kind of a part of that model, but tell us how you got involved in this whole process and the apprenticeship program.
Well, so ever since I was a kid, I always kind of wanted to be a dairy farmer, and I saw both sides of the family sell the cows and stuff, so that's kind of why I went to school. I wanted to go be a dairy farmer, and initially I wanted to go for nutrition, and then that didn't really work out. It wasn't so big on the equations and that, so I got into talking with my forages professor, and she kind of turned me on to some grazing stuff, watching videos and that, and then I had heard about the grazing apprenticeship in high school, but I wasn't sure if it was quite a good fit for me. But then after getting into the forages and stuff and doing forage sampling for different guys that did grazing, I thought that was pretty interesting. And I ended up getting into the program, and Joe was who I ended up hooking up with. And that was right around COVID. So actually, my senior year and the second half of my junior year of college, I lived here and I did all my school through the computer. So that was actually kind of nice. I got a one-year head start on it. So,
yeah, for sure. Well, Joe, tell us how you got this. How did this apprenticeship program get started and grow?
Sure. You know, we've always watched, you know, our farms and trying to figure out, okay, how who's going to be the successor, and how do we keep the farms going? How do we get the next generation involved in general? We looked at managed grazing as being an economically feasible way for the next generation to get started. But it's a very difficult thing to learn in the classroom and through, you know, more conventional type of ways of learning. It's really something that is an experiential learning model that it takes. So as we looked at this, we're like, you know, really, let's just take a chapter out of the playbook of the guilds, and that's registered apprenticeship or formalized apprenticeship. You know, the best teachers are the people that have been doing this for 15, 20 years or longer, and really understand this. So that's really what we did. So in about 2010, we worked with Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development Bureau of Apprenticeship Standards to really start creating and framing out a formal curriculum around this registered apprenticeship. And what we came up with at the end, and it was through a group of dairy farmers and support specialists, we had a good number of meetings, but we came up with what was a two-year, 4,000-hour registered training program. 3,700 hours were actually working paid on the dairy farm, where you follow a job book, which has got a whole series of competencies listed to make sure that the apprentice has got exposure in all pieces of the dairy, whether it is from driving a skid steer to milking a cow to raising a calf to enterprise budgeting even. So it's really a way to engage that individual into the workings of the dairy. And then there were about 300 hours of related instruction that came with it. So that's where the apprenticeship got started. When we got into this about, 3, 4, 5 years, you know, really what we were seeing in Wisconsin, other states were interested in it. And we registered the program then with the Federal Department of Labor, so it allowed other states to adopt it. So currently we're in about 15 states, and we've got well over 200 farmers that have been approved as training farms for this apprenticeship, and so that they can bring in an employee on board, or else we've got a list of employees or potential employees that they can work on hiring and try to find a match. You know, we leave this up to the dairy farm to do and the potential apprentice to figure out. But that's really the profile of the apprenticeship right now.
Our guests today, Joe Tamandel and Anthony Knightsky. Joe, of course, a third-generation dairy farmer. Anthony, a farmer who recently completed the two-year dairy grazing apprenticeship that Joe was just talking about. Questions for them or comments, I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Clara Neipert is our producer, by the way. Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Talking about the dairy grazing apprenticeship program going on here in Wisconsin and other parts of the country as well, with our guest Joe Tamandel, who is a third-generation dairy farmer. He developed the dairy grazing apprenticeship along with others. Anthony Knightsky is a farmer who recently completed the program. He's now a journeyman grazer on the Tamandel farm. I hope you'll join in with your questions or comments or maybe your own experiences as part of the program. Again, the number to call, 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. We'd love to hear from you. Well, Anthony, in your before we go to the phones here, in your experience so far, I mean, what has it meant for you in your future, and how do you see that program, its successes?
Well, it just gives me a good stepping stone to go from, because I had kind of discovered grazing, and I knew I wanted to do grazing, whether it's for dairy or beef or whatever, once I graduated college. But I didn't really know how to go about it other than just learning from YouTube videos, which has its pros and cons. But the nice thing about this is that I'm exposed to plenty of people who have done this before. And they've been doing it for decades. They're good at it. I make connections. I kind of learn how to run things. And, you know, I get my eyes out there. I'm looking at cows, looking at grass, learning how it works. And taking things away from it, what I like about the system, what I would change if I did it myself. And, I mean, ultimately, I don't necessarily have it set in my mind that I'm going to go start my own farm, because I get to do it here, too. And, you know, I have a wife now, and she gets to be a part of it through me. And, I like being able to be around all these other mentors and stuff that can teach me how things go.
Well, it's sounds like a perfect kind of system to me. Marcus in Milwaukee has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Marcus.
Hey, Larry. So my question is where does technology and perhaps like 5G play into this in terms of rotating the cattle to different pastures or milking schedules? I guess how is technology a part of it?
All right. Joe, do you want to take that?
Sure. I'll get started with that. And that's a great question. You know, how technology is a part of how we determine where the cows go and, you know, how much feed we have ahead of us. You know, so the thing about managed grazing, the trick about it is always to have really good, consistent quality forage in front of them. So your whole farm cannot be the same stage of maturity because, you know, you'll be in one day, you'll be in grass that just, you know, too rich for the cow. And the next day it might be, you know, too old for it. So you've got to be a little bit careful, and you want to have the whole farm staggered. So that's really kind of the trick with the managed grazing plan, is you want to set your farm up so you got all different growth stages. What we've done a lot of times in the past and going through is the thing that we've always tried to figure out, measuring the grass, exactly how much do we have there? You know, a lot of farmers, we'd look at it, we'd go visit other farmers. Yeah, I've got a lot of grass, or I grew more grass this year than last year, or we really grew a lot of grass here this August. Well, how much? How much did you grow? Oh, this input really grew a whole lot. Well, how much? And we really never had that. And there were different measuring tools out there, like sticks we could use and put in the grass and try to figure out how many pounds of dry matter. And then there were rising plate meters, and then there was an electronic pasture probe too. What we started, you know, and this is about 2017, University of Missouri developed a tool called Paddock Track, which we got very interested in because it was a way to really measure grass accurately. And it was a wonderful learning tool. So not only a good learning tool, but it's a really good management tool for these farms to just to try to get more productivity out of their pastures. And basically what the Paddock Track does is it's mounted on the front of a four-wheeler or a UTV or something like that. And it's got a sonar in the front of it. And it'll basically take 50 readings per second of the grass underneath it as you're driving across a field. And it'll measure how many pounds or how much grass is there and convert it to pounds of dry matter that's in that actual field. The cool thing about it also is it sends that to your phone, which is linked onto a GPS. So what you're getting at the end of the day is it knows which paddock you're in. It knows what day and what time you're in it. And it can tell you exactly how much dry matter is there. So once you run through your farm, we'll do it once a week. Actually, this is what Anthony's in charge of and does a great job at it, and he can even explain more. But what you're able to do is go through your farm every week, and it'll basically give you a printout of how much dry matter is ahead of you in every field. So how much grass is in every field going forward. So once you can look at that, then you've got a very quantitative amount that's there. You can compare reactions of your pasture grass to different management practices or different inputs or whatever it may be. But you can also identify whether you can speed your cows up, whether you need to slow them down, whether you need to destock, whether you may have to add a little more supplemental feed, whether you need to take some fields to harvest. So it's really a wonderful tool when it comes to it's the precision technology that we're kind of leaning on right now.
that's great. Anthony, how long does it take you to run through those fields with that system?
So we've got three farms that I kind of run it across, and on average it takes me about an hour to run across each of those, and that would come out to about 500 acres 600 acres. That would be about 50 paddocks.
Wow. It's amazing to me that it can be done that quickly and have all that information in a relatively short period of time. Wow. Devin in Milwaukee, in the Milwaukee area, has a question for you. Devin, hello. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, hi. I know this might be a bad question, but just curious on, like, I guess the recruitment side for possible apprenticeships. I understand that there's usually a pay scale of all the apprenticeships, and what does that look like? And then I've been on the website a few times, and I've noticed that usually the employers are pretty far and few between spread out wise. Is there like a relocation help at all with any of that? That's it. Thanks.
All right, thanks a lot for calling.
Yeah, and I can take that. And so absolutely. So it's a registered apprenticeship. It's a paid apprenticeship. And really the wage is set and it's negotiated between the employer and the employee is what it is. That's all part of kind of the hiring process. So we don't necessarily find somebody and place them on a farm and say, okay, you're going to apprentice and train here. We really leave that relationship development up to almost a hiring process where an employer can reach out to a candidate and that may look like they may be a good fit. Take them through a whole interviewing process and kind of establish compensation, wages, housing, whatever it may be. And then from there, if they can, kind of come to an agreement, that's where they'll land. So wages vary, considerably, throughout. But at the end of the day, they still have to be competitive, because we're bringing on individuals who have got college degrees. They've got plenty of other opportunities, right now, just the way the job and the workforce is, that they need to be fairly competitive.
Yeah, it makes good sense. Robert in Amherst Junction, will go to you. Robert, thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you. Wisconsin farmers have always been known as leading early innovation. I think that's what you're talking about today. And in the beginning, Larry, you mentioned you used the word conventional. And I'd like to suggest that the kind of pasturing and farming that you're discussing is more traditional. It's not unconventional. What's unconventional are the CAFOs, like the one near me, that where they feed nothing but chopped corn. They grow nothing but corn. They have terribly polluted the groundwater around this area, which is well documented. And that's unconventional in my view.
Yeah. I struggled with the word conventional myself because I was thinking back to earlier times. But a comment on that. Anthony, what do you think?
It's kind of interesting because part of it has to do with that march behind technology. And especially in the early days, when people were switching to more confinement, I think a lot of it had to do with the availability of fertilizers and the availability of different grains and stuff and the innovations people were making with field work. And I think that when it's being pushed cheap like that, it's not necessarily being incentivized to use the grass. And we also didn't have a lot of the research out there about the benefits of having good soil health. And I think in time, and this is just me, granted, I'm new to this, but I think in time, things will shift more towards the more sod type management systems, because every research study that comes out is putting more things towards the soil health. And I think a lot of it has to do with just the technology of it.
Joe, last year you were awarded the Wisconsin Leopold Conservation Award, just to kind of go along with what Anthony's talking about. Your work, and maybe talk about that award, which is really pretty cool, and about the grazing, how it benefits the environment.
Yeah, thanks, and thanks for the comments from the call lines too. Leopold Conservation Award that's very cool. I've always watched it, and it's an incredible honor to be awarded and recognized in that. Really what they looked at, and it was the permanent ground cover that we had on all these acres. So we've got a whole kind of an island here that is not tilled. So we don't have the soil erosion. We're not witnessing on big rain events. We are showing, and studies will show that, we can sequester more carbon. We can infiltrate more water on these old sods. There's less nitrate leaching from, these type of management systems. It'll retain more soil and it'll retain more phosphorus. And then we can even look in some of the wildlife and pollinator, impacts on it too. And they can be very conducive to those different species and impacts. So, that's a lot of it just flat comes down to an integrated animal system based on permanent ground cover, which basically keeps everything covered up and shielded. So, that's those are the big attributes, the environmental attributes of it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Jim in Janesville has a question. Jim, hi.
Hi. Yeah, a couple of questions. Number one, what kind of ground are you using, the availability and cost of the actual acres? And are you able to call that dairy organic? And if you are you get a poundage per cow that is similar to what some of the dairy averages in the state? And how many acres per cow for the 6 months do you have to use per cow?
Okay.
Okay. No, those are all great questions. Great questions. So, you know, we're on basically cropland, you know, so we're, you know, the acres that we're grazing with our dairy cows are all tillable acres that could be utilized for corn, beans, oats, small grains, whatever it may be. So that is what we're utilizing. We're able to utilize a little bit rougher ground here also just with dry stock and heifers and other, you know, animal classifications with it too. We did actually, we converted the farms, started converting to an organic certification in 2017. And we did it a lot. You know, we're managed grazing at the heart. You know, this is our main practice. We're so close to all the organic standards. And we did this as, you know, really kind of a way to have a secure, stable market is what we saw, you know, with the organic. So we made the step into that. It's still a very difficult market. You know, it's not a silver bullet by any means, but we're able to navigate it and we understand it and it fits into our practices pretty well. As far as milk production and out of the animals, so we're utilizing a smaller framed animal. We're using a lot of New Zealand type of genetics, and that's coming from a nation or country that's a very grazing based. So we've got a smaller animal, so it's probably a 1,200-pound animal versus what you might see a more traditional Holstein, for example, and that's 1,600 pounds, you know, plus for some of the big framing ones. We're not pulling as much milk out of these grazing systems per cow as you would out of a more conventional or confined type of a system. Those systems are very good and very efficient in pushing a lot of milk out per cow and really dialing in on that production standards. So we're not that high. But, you know, we've got an animal that's smaller, and we like to think that they last a lot longer also.
So the flip side of that, too, is that your input costs, cost of machinery and all that, are much less, I would guess.
Yes, you know. Yeah, there is some of that, Larry. You're right. You know, it is less. So anytime that you can take 1 pound of feed and you can have a cow go and harvest that on her own and spread her own, you know, manure at the end out on the field, you don't have to go out and cut it, merge it, chop it, haul it, pack it, pile it, cover it with plastic, put it in a mixer, feed it and haul the manure. I mean, there's a lot of steps there for every other pound of feed and a lot of costs that you'd have to feed. So correct. We don't get the production necessarily. We maybe don't have the cow, you know, for that type of production. We're looking for a different type of a breed, but we are able to eliminate the costs on any pound of grass that we can get those cows to eat. And I think the follow-up to the question, the one I forgot from the previous caller, is it's nice to have an acre and a half per cow. You know, we're pushing a couple of the platforms. We're down to an acre a cow. But, you know, we're really, like I said, we're moving three times a day. We're very intense. We are interseeding, so we're no-tilling, you know, every 2 years to really try to keep these pastures thick and productive.
How much work is involved in moving from one field to another, Anthony?
It's actually not too bad. So most of what our fencing and waterline system is we've got a three-strand high tensile electric fence that goes around the perimeter. And then we've got a single strand wire that divides up our interior paddocks. And we have lanes going to just about every paddock. So in all reality, all it takes is you switch a gate and then you can go put up your front poly wire to keep them in. And it's not too bad. I can I can set up 3-4 days worth of feed in an afternoon for our cows. And I set up fences for 2 of the 3 farms that we run here. So in a day, I can set up for a weekend that I'm gone or something. And I pre-set all those fences and they're all set.
So not bad when it comes to the amount of effort involved. Pam and Marshall has a question for you. Hi, Pam.
Hi, I'm not a farmer. I'm a consumer. I love milk, and I drink about a gallon a week myself. Here's the deal. I want to make sure that I'm getting milk from cows that are treated humanely, and I would like them to be just what you folks are doing. But the packaging is misleading sometimes. And I found out with eggs, just because it says cage-free doesn't mean that they're let outside and so forth. What buzzwords should I be looking for on the package of milk that's going to let me know that it's something that's done humanely?
Yeah, you go to a grocery store, and how many different kinds of milk does the shopper see? It's a huge number. Anyway, just as an aside comment, Joe.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It can be tough. It can be very difficult trying to identify, which brand you're looking for. You know, you'll see grass-based out there or 100% grass. You'll see in some of them, and that's what you kind of want to watch. Some of them are falling underneath these organic labels. But again, there's a lot of them. And there isn't specifically, an all grass or a label that's kind of in the conventional world necessarily, or in a non-organic type of certified market. And something that we're working on and to launch off of the paddock track technology that was brought up earlier. And I'm getting to the question, we're trying to address some of that right now. We were awarded a Climate Smart Commodities grant here from the USDA just recently. We're very excited about it. And that's really, it's the USDA threw like $3 billion at trying to identify market-based systems to realize climate impacts of different practices. And there were a ton of projects that applied for this, well over 1,000, I believe. They selected 141. Dairy Grazing Apprenticeship was fortunate enough to get one of those awards to do work on managed grazing dairy. And we're about the only one that's really doing that work. But what we're ultimately doing is we're taking this paddock track data, which is a very technical precision measure, monitor, and verification kind of a tool. And we're going to try to correlate that along with some soil sampling, but we're going to correlate that pasture production and the amount of years that field is underneath grass to actual carbon retention or sequestration. So that's what the basis of our climate grant is and the climate work that we're doing. And the big picture with it is to try to realize that climate impact within a label. So could it be realized in some of your consumer labels when you're going into the market where maybe there's a, don't hold me account, we're just getting going with it, but maybe there's a QR code where you're able to take a picture of it and it'll be able to kind of trace that product all the way back through the practices that the management practices that product went through to get to you. And so within our grant and our project, we're working with University of Missouri. We're working with, in the paddock track, we're working with Dillon Analytics, who's out of Colorado, to do the correlation between the paddock track data, soil tests, and carbon profile. And then we're also working with the Global Food Traceability Center, which is an entity underneath the Institute of Food Technologists. And what they do is they basically provide the traceability all the way through the scopes of production through the supply chain so that we can have more clarity at the consumer level on where these types of products have come from and what their climate actual impact is or, to the environment. So it's exciting work that we're really looking forward to.
Yeah, it sure is. I just got a note this morning or an email this morning from USDA on the Climate Smart Commodities Grant Project, as a matter of fact. And there's open enrollment now for some of those projects, and it was interesting to see. A listener called, couldn't stay with us. Can you assess the fields with drones instead of running over on four-wheelers?
You know, that's a good question, too. We could get there. Never say never. You know, with technology and the way we're watching this, it could very well happen. It's something that's being watched. It's going to take a little bit more, obviously, between, you know, how unsteady a drone is. But I think the technology could exist, and we could get there. You know, even with we've got to be careful because, like, see, we really need a solid measurement or a good measurement for this to be. So even off the four-wheelers, I mean, we're calibrating them almost by the weight of the person that's on it. So we know the height off of the grass on where it is so we can get an accurate reading. And then we're actually doing cuttings and clippings out in the field to, you know, proof test what that sonar is reading versus what's really there. But yeah, it could very well happen. You know, satellites are getting better and better too. But right now, this is the thing for these real intensive systems. This type of data, it's almost worth the little bit of extra time to run around a four-wheeler to get the really good data.
Cheryl emailed us, can you speak to the positives for the cows and the humans consuming their milk? As an example, Cheryl says the natural enjoyment for the cows of being outside, eating more nutritiously, decreased cortisol level due to less stress. Would this also be more nutrition for the humans, including the decreased cortisol level?
Well, I would say to start it off, just anecdotally, we can taste a difference in the milk based on what field the cows were in and what time of year it is. So I would say definitely. And you can tell, especially in the springtime when the grass first comes back, they just love going out to the pasture. They'll run around and go play and stuff. And I think there is something to that reduced cortisol level. And in addition, I would say I've done quite a bit of butchering. I butchered through college. My dad was a butcher and I never did it for a job, but you can tell the difference between these cows that are on grass versus a more conventional one. You can tell it in the fat. And actually I believe, I could be wrong, but I believe there is some statistics on the actual shear force tenderness is actually lower with grass-fed, which I think is really interesting. And I think there's some marketing opportunities for that.
Well, it sounds great. And I hope we can talk about this again. Lots of input from our listeners. Joe and Anthony, I thank you so much for being with us, and we'll do it again down the road. Thank you.
Sounds great. Thanks so much for having us, Larry.
Thanks. Yeah.
Joe Tamandel is a third-generation dairy farmer in central Wisconsin, and he developed the dairy grazing apprenticeship. Anthony Knightsky is a farmer who recently completed that program and is now a journeyman grazer for Joe's farm. Great to have both of them with us, and down the road we'll take another look at this for sure. So happy to have them with us. Well, coming up, we're going to take a look at a book called Crossings, How Road Ecology is Shaping the Future of Our Planet. Ben Goldfarb back with us once again. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network.